The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's get a little letter here from the Editor-in-Chief of the Reader's Digest. Front Porch News. My first job was as a cub reporter in a pack of 10 journalists at the Gilroy Dispatch in California. The paper came out 3 times a week. The town was the garlic capital of the world. I bet it smelled good. The farmers and farm workers, blue-collar workers, and the rare commuter. I covered school board politics, fatal crashes on the highway south whenever was needed. My colleagues loomed large, as large as the tomato trucks rolling down the 101. They were like a troop in a loud Steinbeck novel, yoked to one little room. Every phone call was in your ear. Cigarette smoke reached eye level by noon. It was hot. We sweated through it. All that energy went toward Gilroy, honoring it, laughing about it, keeping it honest. I wasn't born to be a newsman, it turned out, but I loved being part of that group. They were part of their community, played softball with the people they wrote about. The news they brought their neighbors served as glue. On page 104, which would be due later, we published a chronicle of the final days of a paper in Wall Road, Minnesota, just the kind of outlet a small town needs. Its police blotter reported included everyone, no exceptions, not even when the editor drove drunk. Now in one more place, that accountability is gone. About 2,000 U.S. papers have closed since 2004. I assumed the same had happened in Gilroy. But the Dispatch is alive. Editor Eric Chaloub told me that he's undaunted, though the editorial staff is down to 4 to put out the Dispatch and 2 other new papers. The Dispatch owns its own building, prints every Friday with a couple of online stories a day, is on top of what people want to read about. Gilroy still feels like a small town, he said, both bringing me up to speed and making me smile. The people here care for people. Not that you need my encouragement, but I hope we all do that for our humble local papers before we miss them, because they're gone. And then let's go to letters. If I can turn the page here, hang on a second. They stuck together. Can't help that. She finally said yes. I love this story about the 40-year gap in George Ann and Jerry's relationship. My wife and I met in 1955 and then ran into each other for the first time in 40 years at our class reunion in 1996. We dated long distance for a year and now we've been married for 24. My advice? Don't ever give up. Tracy Perry, Longmont, Colorado. Can you trust your dentist? Every industry has practitioners who take advantage of clients. Trust must be a two-way street. As a practicing dentist, I trust patients to give an accurate health history. They trust me to give the best care possible. My heart goes out to those deceived. There are great dentists out there. Please find us to receive the proper care. Robert Johns, DDS, Leanwood, Kansas. I think Black History Month should last all year. As I was reading, I thought that more accomplished Black Americans beyond the usual ones would finally be praised. But only a few were mentioned. What about Ursula Burns, the first Black woman CEO of a Fortune 500 company? Or Bessie Coleman, the first Black woman to hold a pilot's license? Tara Lynn Wall, Kerrville, Texas. Word power. I was surprised that learning love in tennis actually comes from the love of the game. Years ago, my French teacher told us the French called zero the egg, or l'œuf, and English tennis players changed that pronunciation to love. You call that a compliment? I love your story about the backhanded compliments. It reminded me of an old boss. We called her the big butt, that's B-U-T, because every compliment we got from her was immediately followed by butt. Laverne Perkins, Fort Collins, Colorado. Frank Mangiello's true story about running into a woman from his postal route and her saying she didn't recognize him with clothes on gave me a good laugh. A swimsuit once saw me at the mall and ran up to say hi. When she told her mom I was her swim teacher, the mom recognized, also said, "Oh, I didn't recognize you with clothes." Needless to say, so many eyes turned our way. Ida Lowe, Ramada, California. If any of you have any connections with elementary school teachers, If their students, for the first time, see them out in public, in a store or somewhere like that, they can't believe it's their teacher. They all think the teachers live at the school. Brain games. I was shocked to see my daughter's nickname as one of your crosswords in your brain games puzzle. We don't do those, so it doesn't really matter. We found a fix. Your tip about using your phone as a magnifying glass can be done even more quickly than going through 3 different steps and settings. Just click on your camera app, then pinch and zoom it with your regular camera screen to magnify whatever you need to read. DC via email. 13 things. In your Kissing Facts article, you mentioned that swampy microbes can help build new immunity against infections and even allergies. My dad used to have a honey allergy, but after he married my mom, it disappeared. Corey also used to say it was because her name, Melissa, comes from the Greek root for honeybee. Brent McBurney, Alexandria, Virginia. Tripping down memory lane. I use secretary syndrome to explain my own memory holes, similar to the ones described by Bruce Kelly's editor. Note, when you're young, the secretary in your brain files away all the information you gather and pulls it out when you need it. When you turn 50, she goes part-time. The information is still filed, but it takes longer to retrieve. When you turn 60, she retires, Kim Darulja, and when you turn 70, she leaves the country. After a friend shared a story long since forgotten, his wife said, "How do you know that's not true?" He replied, "Well, it could have been." Walt Meyer, Ozona, Texas. And let me turn to the advertisements here and get to the next article, which is Everyday Heroes. When a hiker falls 75 feet from a mountain cliff, a young stranger goes to extremes to save her. And there's a picture of Henry Grant, who's a young man, dark hair, looks like he's fairly tall, good-looking young man. As the mountains go, 1,642-foot Squaw Peak isn't particularly imposing, but its inviting views of western Massachusetts have tricked hikers into becoming complacent amid its steep, slippery cliffs, resulting in countless injuries and even deaths. Henry Grant, a week shy of starting his freshman year at Ithaca College, respected Squaw Peak's record. As such, he stayed a good 10 feet from the edge while waiting for his mother to catch up to him one day. In August 2019, he watched 15 or so other hikers enjoy the vistas. One hiker, around 60 and dressed in pink, was peeking over the lip of the precipice with her husband. When Grant's mother rejoined him, the two turned to continue on their way. Suddenly he heard a tumbling, a thump, and another thump, he called the Cornell Daily Sun, when he heard something chilling. "Paula! Paula!" a man yelled frantically. Grant wheeled around. The woman in pink was nowhere to be seen. She'd fallen off the side of the mountain. Several hikers immediately started looking for her, but their view was obstructed by trees. Grant told his mother, "I hate to say this, but they're probably going to find a body." Uncertain they could help, Grant and his mother headed down the trail. But when he saw hikers still searching, he decided to lend a hand. "My young brain was like, I can do it," he says. After assuring his mother he would be safe, he trekked off the trail alone, hoping he wasn't too late. After 15 minutes of scrambling over boulders, pushing past prickly brush, and stripping down patches of loose dirt, Grant spotted a figure about 25 feet above him. She was dressed in pink and crumpled in a kneeling position on a small rocky outcropping. The woman had fallen about 75 feet. Miraculously, she was still alive. "Paula," Grant shouted. "Paula, is that you?" The woman barely responded. She was clearly hurt and delirious. Grant called 911 to report her location. He waited where he was for a bit, but she kept trying to move, and every time she moved, she slipped a little more. Afraid that in her muddled state of mind she might tumble off the outcropping to her death, Grant crawled up on all fours up a tight, narrow path, gaining traction by digging into the dirt with his fingers and feet until he reached Paula. She was moaning and barely making sense. Her head, arms, and legs were bleeding. Though he didn't know it then, she had suffered a compound leg fracture, 10 broken ribs, a broken clavicle, and serious concussion. Securing himself against a tree, Grant gently put her hand in his and tried to keep her mind off the pain by peppering her with questions. "Where are you from? What do you do for a living? Do you have kids?" Soon they were joined on the perch by another hiker named Simon. About 45 minutes later, first responders arrived on the summit. To reach them, a rescuer rappelled down and secured Paula to a stretcher. Rescuers at the summit lifted the stretcher to the top and then carried her to a waiting ATV. Eventually, Paula and her husband were flown by helicopter to a hospital. And meanwhile, Grant and Simon were now the ones in a tricky spot. The rescuers attached harnesses and pulleys to help them climb the 75 feet to the trail above. 5 hours after the women in pink had fallen, Grant was back on top of Squaw Peak. Paula, who is fully recovered, is Paula Captain Reese, a New Jersey psychologist who had traveled to the Berkshire Mountains of Massachusetts for some R&R following her mother's death. Instead, she met a young man who, she stated in a letter to the Boston Globe, is her new hero. At 18, she wrote, "Henry was already participating in building the rest of my life." Shatara Sims had weathered some tough years. This is just the ticket. In 2012, her eldest daughter was murdered during an argument in Kansas City, Missouri. Last year, the single mother lost her job in the recession. She had only $7 in her pocket as she headed into the grocery store one day last July with her 12-year-old daughter, Riaka Edmondson. Then Lady Luck finally cut Sims some slack. She and her daughter found a dollar bill in the parking lot. Maybe this was their day, they told each other, so they each bought a lottery ticket and won $100. But before they could spend their windfall, Rakia had an idea. The news in Kansas City that week had been filled with stories about a police officer, Tyler Moss, who had been shot ahead in the line of duty. He was in critical condition. Rakaya and her mother had never forgotten how kind the police had been after their own family member was killed. "The detectives were really there for us," Sim says. "They came to see my kids. They were fathers, therapists. They were everything." Rakaya wanted to give their lottery winnings to Auburn Moss's family. Her mom readily agreed. On July 10th, Simmons called the police and made an anonymous donation. Moved by her generous expression of thanks, the officers did what they do best. They tracked Sims down. When she explained the family's motivation, the officers could hardly believe it. "With her current financial hardship, we encouraged her to keep the money," the department lady explains. She refused, saying the officer's family needed it, and police needed to know they were supported. By then, that feeling of support was mutual. The police set up a GoFundMe page for Sims, who they dubbed the Woman with the Heart of Gold. Their goal was $10,000. As of January 11, 21, they had raised $165,405. Even better, Officer Moss, who had a 1% chance of survival, is out of the hospital and recovering. By the way, Sims and her daughter are both African-American, and the police officer that was shot was white. How about a little humor? My new husband's secret life. I thought the man I married was a rock star. That turned out to be closer to the truth than I ever imagined. Imagine, when I was 20, a man I barely knew proposed without a ring. I said yes. Our friends were alarmed about our fast decision to marry and move from Tennessee to New York City. I got a handwritten letter from an elder at church suggesting I wait to get to know my fiancé better. His friends held a tearful intervention. One of our beloved professors questioned my decision. My mother referred to my fiancé not by his name David, by the nickname Rank Stranger. But we were in love. After refusing premarital counseling, we didn't need it, we insisted, David and I got married and moved to Gramercy Park neighborhood in Manhattan. We could see the Empire State Building at night. We craned our necks while sitting on our creaky fire escape. My life was romantic as a love song. Then after 1 week of marriage, the phone rang. "May I speak to David?" asked a sultry voice woman. I handed my new husband the phone, which he quickly hung up. "Wrong number," he said. A few hours later, it rang again. Another woman. I dusted near the phone so I could eavesdrop. Did my seemingly loyal husband have a double life? Another wrong number, he said. The calls became more regular at all hours of the day and night. It got so common I was no longer surprised when the breathy voice morphed into sighs of disappointment. He always got off the phone exasperated. It wasn't an act. I took messages when he was out. Desiree, Brandy, Jill. In some cases, they were testing when he said he wasn't there. One woman started crying. "We were together just yesterday." "Where?" I demanded. "In Soho," she said. My husband worked at a midtime law firm during the day, or so he told me. Had I made a terrible mistake? My friends were right. I didn't even know him. Maybe our relationship was all a ruse. I've heard stories of people getting married only not to realize their spouse had a double life. "Are we talking about the same David? Tall, blonde, and handsome," she added sarcastically. "Are you going to tell me I have the wrong number? I'm looking at the note he wrote me now." She read the number. It was ours. I was confused and hurt. Instead of hearing the female voices on the phone, I heard only the unending warning of friends and clanking in my head. "What's really going on?" I finally mastered the courage to confront my husband. "Wrong numbers usually don't ask for you by name." But David was just as confounded as I was. At least he appeared to be. Finally, a man called. "Sorry, he's at work," I said. "All work should go through me," he spat. I wasn't sure how law firms allocated cases, but apparently David was doing it wrong. "Who are you?" I asked. "I've owned Nova for years," he shot back. "The question is, who are you?" He had a point. I was a new addition. I wanted love so badly that I ignored any inconvenient details, such as barely knowing the man I married. "I'm his wife." The needle label felt heavy in my mouth. Silence for a beat, then two. "Why didn't he tell me about you? He exploded. "It was spontaneous," I said before launching into the offense of getting married quickly, but with less enthusiasm than I had before the call started. "I'll be right over," he said. "Don't talk to anyone. We have to fix this." "I am not a problem to be fixed." "Are you?" He paused and lowered his voice. "Pregnant? Expecting a little David Lee? A kid will really hurt our comeback." "Lee?" I asked. "My husband's middle name is Austin." "What comeback?" "I know my own client's middle name." "Client? I'm talking about David French. I'm talking about David Lee Roth, the singer." Even those who spent 1980s trying to figure out the Rubik's Cube were aware of David Lee Roth, a Van Halen film. He had a mane of golden hair, acrobatic stage moves made possible by his brightly colored spandex, the platonic form of a rock star. He was always surrounded by women. My David wore glasses and suits and sometimes dressed up for Star Wars and Lord of the Ring premieres. There'd been a big mix-up. Apparently the rock star had changed his number right before we moved to Manhattan, but still gave out his old number to women he met but wanted to let down easily. That's how, for a brief period of time, we became David Lee Roth's answering service. Later that year, we even fielded a call from Roth's dad. Once we put this puzzle together, the man on the other end of the phone line, his agent, I realized, sighed in relief. Soon we were both laughing. Neither of us had been betrayed. But during the short time it took for David Lee Roth to transition to a new telephone number, I started to doubt the man I married. How precarious love is, I thought back then. Surprisingly, it turned out to be quite resilient. Over the years, I've learned that our desire for others does not mean we're an inconvenience or a problem to be solved. As beautifully described in the immortal words of one of Van Valen's hit songs, you got to roll with the punches and get to what's real. Oh, that's a funny story. The genius section. Go ahead, do nothing. We push ourselves to work harder, but taking a break can often fuel a burst in productivity and creativity. In 1910, the Los Angeles Times ran a story about a boy who was charged with opening a valve every so often on a water pump, powered by a steam engine to release the buildup pressure. His whole job consisted of staring at these whirring pieces of metal all day. Needless to say, the kid got incredibly bored. One day the supervisor walked in and the boy was nowhere to be found, yet the pump ran just as it should. The lazy boy had contrived a mechanical release for the pump and won his freedom from monotony. The first iteration of the automatic steam engine was born. Now, this story may be apocryphal, but the boy's behavior reflects a deeper truth. When we are feeling lazy and disinclined to do something, we often search for an easier way to do the undesirable task at hand. We try to streamline the process and save time and effort. In other words, laziness can drive innovation. In recent years, some psychologists and business leaders have wised up to this insight, shifting our perspective of what laziness really means. Strategic idleness may actually be a powerful tool. Both Bill Gates and Walter Chrysler have been credited, probably erroneously, with an apt quote, "I always chose a lazy person to do a hard job because a lazy person will find an easy way to do it." Research shows that our brains are wired for laziness. For our ancestors, energy was a precious resource. People had to conserve energy to compete for food, flee from predators, and fight. Learning to calculate the caloric costs and benefits of our action was critical to survival, and expending energy on anything other than short-term gains was risky, so we learned to play it safe. Now that day-to-day survival is less of an issue, unless you're in COVID, it seems natural that we would opt for indolence or inactivity, but the opposite has occurred. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, Americans sleep less and work more than we used to. Productivity per worker has gone up 400% since 1950. Our culture teaches by example that our worth depends on how industrious we are, so we work even harder to produce even more. Until 10 years ago, many psychological studies emphasized high executive function, skills such as focus, memory, and problem solving, and achieving goals as essential traits for success and happiness. Meanwhile, daydreaming and mind-wandering were associated with unhappiness. This judgment has an almost ancient history. Long ago, many Christian theologians derided sloth as a sin, one of the seven deadly ones. In fact, idleness was declared a moral failing, and its cure lay in hard work. But there's one big paradox. The harder we work, the less productive we are. When demand in our lives intensifies, we tend to hunker down and push harder, says Tony Schwartz, head of the Energy Project, a productivity consulting firm. The problem is that without any downtime to refresh and recharge, we are less efficient, make more mistakes, and get less engaged with what we're doing. This forced sustained focus leads to selective attention, which can hinder your ability to generate fresh solutions and ideas. Even worse, too caught up in the end result, we overlook the quality of our experience while working and living, and thus deprive our lives of meaning. Amid this epidemic of overwork, how can we make our labor more meaningful and our lives more fulfilling? Perhaps we could do with a healthy dose of deliberate daydreaming? Current research in psychology and neuroscience points to a new understanding of the value of the wandering mind. Studies show that taking breaks and allowing your thoughts to drift can help your brain retain information, refocus, gain fresh perspective, and make new connections between ideas. Just think of the eureka moments that occur when we're engaged in the most mundane task, such as showering or doing the dishes. One study out of the University of British Columbia shows that mind-wandering increases activity in the brain's default mode, or DMN, a system of connected brain areas that deals with problem-solving and shows increased activity when a person is not focused on the outside world. Here's the core problem. When the time finally comes to put our feet up, we often don't know how. We have little training in how to be idle. Take away a kid's toy or a teen's smartphone and then tell them to entertain themselves? They'll likely be at a loss. But would you fare much better? So maybe this week, notice when you have some downtime in your day, some white space in your calendar. Instead of filling the space with more work or more digital distractions, step back, recline, or be in the words of poet Mary Oliver, idle and blessed. Going on a fun run, jogging is very beneficial. It's good for your legs and your feet. It's also very good for the ground. It makes it feel needed. How about a little humor now? Life in these United States. And there's two pictures of two dogs sitting in a corner of a room, and one of them has one of those collars they put on a dog so it can't scratch. And the other one looks at it and says, I don't want to add to your humiliation, but you have some kibble stuck in your teeth. It was my wedding one day, and no one was happier than my 78-year-old mother. But as she approached the church doors, an usher asked, which side are you on? Oh, no, she said, are they fighting already? A guy joined our Zoom class shirtless, so the tutor told him to turn his video off. He did as told, and up popped his profile photo, a picture of him shirtless at the beach. I don't get it when I see skinny people running. Aren't you done yet? I had to rethink when I ranked my family's hierarchy when my sister and I found out Dad holding court amid friends at a party. Oh, gentlemen, he said, pointing to my sister, let me introduce you to my daughter, Terry. And this, he motioned to me, is my daughter Terry's sister, Gail. Looking for the perfect Wi-Fi network name? Borrow one of these tried and true ones. I pronounce you man in Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi fo-fum. Mom, click here for internet. Node Voldemodem. Vladimir Computin. Click here for viruses. Recipes used to be tense. Used to be terse instructions handwritten on an index card. Now you scroll through a Paris engagement story before you get how to make the soup. How true. My sister came across a movie poster online that showed a man passionately kissing a woman in the pouring rain. How come you never kissed me like that? She demanded of her husband. He shrugged, saying, we never get that much rain. Sense and Odd Sensibilities. If you're a fan of Chanel No. 5, these five perfumes may or not pass the smell test, but they are real. So ask for them by name, hopefully without gagging. Funeral Home. Its manufacturer, Demeter, calls it a blend of lilies, carnations, gladiolus, and chrysanthemums with a hint of mahogany and oriental carpet. Garage ou de toilette. Take a whiff of garage, says LuckyScent.com, and you'll recognize traces of kerosene, leather, and with plastic floral tones. Powell's by Powell's. Named after a famous bookstore in Portland, Oregon, it boasts hints of violet, wood, and biblicore, the musty smell of old books. This perfume recreates a labyrinth of books, secret libraries, ancient scrolls, and cognac. Swilled by philosopher kings, according to Powers. Ude Stilton. This perfume recreates the earthy and fruity aroma of blue Stilton cheese, insists the website. Now smell this. Horse. From the perfumery for strange women. This aroma calls a well-stocked stable with notes of hay, dry musk, leather, and oats, says basenotes.com. Doesn't mention anything about manure. Quotable quotes. I want to make music that helps, because that's the way I help. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I don't work in government. I make music. Put all your eggs in one basket, then watch that basket, Andrew Carnegie. I started out reading as an escape, then a chore, then a habit, then a luxury. Now I've only realized what a necessity it is, Phoebe Waller-Bridge. We either make ourselves miserable or we make ourselves strong. The amount of work is the same, Carlos Castaneda. I decided to learn to play the drums, which is the best medicine for me, at least. Maybe not so much for those around me. And that's from Bubba Wallace, NASCAR driver. Hope is bold. It can look beyond personal convenience and open us to grand ideas and make life beautiful and worthwhile. Advance along the paths of hope. That's from Pope Francis. I will show my daughter she can be anything she wants to be. She wonders why I ever thought she couldn't. Candace Parker, athlete. People can't drive you crazy if you don't give them the keys. Mike Bechtel, author. Poach to ponder. We lift our gazes not to what stands between us, but what stands before us. We close the divide because we know we put our future first. We must first put our preferences aside. We lay down our arms so we can reach out our arms to one another. We seek harm to none and harmony for all. A And that's from Amanda Gorman, the poet who spoke at the inauguration. I'm going to do something a little different. I think we're going to do a full hour of Reader's Digest today. The Consumer Reports for this month is the automobile edition, and I really need to go through it and kind of screen out some stuff. I know many of our readers cannot drive, but they also are usually attached to or married with to someone who can, who might be interested in some of the information. That's why I do the Reader's Digest, or the Consumer Reports on cars. So we'll get to that next week, but this week we're going to do continue to do the Reader's Digest since we started a little farther into the month on it. Life well lived, the taste of home. Nothing says childhood to me like an Army combat ration, as my husband soon learned. And there's a picture of a young man with a baby in a uniform and another one with a bunch of kids sitting around a kid. And a picture of a package of a MRE, a meal ready to eat. My husband, Mark, looked at me confused. "You used to like this stuff," he asked as he dipped his brown plastic spoon into his mushy shredded barbecue beef. "You have to mix it up," I said, "so the heat is evenly spread throughout." I tore the top of my own meal, spaghetti with beef and sauce. The aroma, a mix of SpaghettiOs and hot Spam, rushed out of the packet into my face. It smelled like home. Growing up, I was obsessed with meals ready to eat, or MREs, the thick plastic pouches containing about 1,250 calories of highly preserved food, were introduced in 1981 and marked a significant upgrade from the C-ration meals of old, which I ate a lot of in the Marine Corps. Believe me, they ain't great. With their airtight, heavy-duty packaging, they can withstand just about any climate and are designed to last a minimum of 3 years with no refrigeration. They give troops a taste of home and the ability to maintain a high-calorie diet while away on the battlefield. In my Army household, there was always one lying around somewhere in the back of my dad's car, in a garage, in a closet. Nothing beats eating dinner from those brown plastic pouches. And that's why, when I saw MREs for sale on Amazon, I bought some for $15 apiece. I posted a picture on social media, and my military friends laughed. But as I opened the shipment, it felt as if I'd just unearthed a box filled with childhood memorabilia. I was finally able to give my husband a literal taste of my past. Mark cupped open his MRE and spilled its content onto our coffee table. He held up the bag and eyed the instructions printed on its packaging. A water-activated heating packet uses a mix of magnesium, metal, iron, and salt to generate the heat that warms up the meal. With the shredded barbecue beef packet tucked inside, I poured water into the heating envelope, and watches almost instantly began to bubble. When I was a kid, this always felt like magic. The instructions called for you to lean the package against a rock or something. My father used to take this part very seriously, sending my siblings and me out into our yard to find a rock big enough to get the job done. Mark and I leaned our heaters against a stack of books instead. We've been together for 6 years, married for three, and in that time I've fallen in love with Mark's hometown of Buckluth, Kansas. I've cheered for the Buckluth Bulldogs in the same high school stadium where Mark once played football. As the team's quarterback, I've driven down the same winding dirt roads he and his friends used to drive, sometimes sneaking barrels while parking underneath the big Kansas sky. I slept in his childhood bedroom, the walls still plastered with clippings from local newspapers and posters of the 90s sport icons such as Michael Jordan and Emmitt Smith. The idea of growing up in the same town all my life, let alone the same house, was foreign to me. During my father's 24-year Army career, my family lived in 11 different houses in 5 states and 2 countries. While I never had a hometown, I did have a culture. The Army was, and still is, home to me, and MREs are part of that. My siblings and I weren't allowed to eat them often. My mother said they would constipate us. Back then, I didn't know what that meant, so I've just rolled my eyes. They were saved for camping trips or the nights when my dad was in charge of dinner, while my mom was out with other Army wives playing bunco, a dice game that was popular back then. My father could have offered us anything on those nights, pizza, Burger King, ice cream, but we would choose MREs. Eating one was an adventure, and we savored every bite. My first experience of anxiety came when I had to choose which one I wanted. The main entree was printed in dark brown letters on the front of the pack. Menu number 12, cheese tortellini. Menu number 17, beef ravioli. Menu number 23, meatloaf with gravy. Staring at the packages lying on our counter, my hands would shake as they hovered over the rations before grabbing one. It was a difficult decision. It wasn't about just the entree. It was about the extras that weren't mentioned on the outside of the package. The dry little cake, or the brownie that crumbled into a million pieces, the second the package was unsealed. The bready crackers with the cheese spread, if you were lucky, and the chunky peanut butter if you weren't. Jalapeno or regular cheddar, it didn't matter. I loved that cheese spread. There was nothing more disappointing than ripping open an MRE, seeing the peanut butter, and knowing you'd have to wait until the next time to try your luck at the cheese. There are so many things created for war that remind me of my childhood. Reveille in the morning and retreat in the evening. Black Hawk helicopters with their big, echoey hangars, dusty brown boots, camouflage uniforms, and heavy flight helmets. These were just part of the job for my father, but they defined my childhood. I grew up on post saying, yes, sir, and yes, ma'am, using military time and speaking in acronyms. I showed my military ID card at the shop at when I went to first car with gas, and then again at the gym, the commissary, and the PX. These on-post amenities were created exclusively for service members and independents, but as a child, I never knew they were unique to my community. I've never served in the military myself, but I always feel a kinship with those wearing a uniform when I walk by them at airports and see them on subway platforms. I'll forever smile when I hear the familiar hum of a Chinook helicopter flying overhead. We'll continue to feel a little extra pride for the Army every year on Flag Day, my service's birthday, because like MREs, these things are a reminder of my home. They're not so bad, right? I said to Mark with a smile, breaking my dry cracker in half and smearing the lumpy cheese spread on each piece. Growing up, I never, ever would have shared this precious MRE dish with anyone. This cheesy stuff, he said, eyeing the cracker before taking a bite, isn't that bad. Kelly McHugh Stewart holds an MFA in creative writing from New School and is currently working on a memoir about her father, Colonel John M. McHugh, who was killed in action in Kabul, Afghanistan in 2010. There's nothing like a home rehydrated meal. There are people who love MREs for real. Along with giving them five-star ratings, some folks offer rave reviews on Amazon.com. Chicken with tomatoes and feta cheese. Excellent. Very flavorful, and the chicken was quite tender. Beef roast with vegetables. Very tasty. Came with a cherry blueberry cobbler. Amazing. I wish I could buy it in the store. It was that good. Vegetables with pasta and taco sauce. That was my first MRE ever. Absolutely wonderful. Everything was fresh and much more delicious than I was expecting. Pork and white sauce. Holy smokes. Came with a cracker and cheese spread, which were good. Unfortunately, my cat thought, though, too, there was a bit of fighting over the custody of the cheese spread. But the end, I won. I won! National Teacher of the Year. And there's a drawing of a young lady with a surrounded by a bunch of kids and a sign that says, Welcome to our classroom. Tabatha Rosspory, age 33 in Winfield, Kansas. How long have you been teaching preschool? 11 years, so this feels like a good celebration of a decade of hard work. And you teach in a rather unusual school. We're the first public school pre-K in Kansas housed inside a nursing home. The impact the children have on the lives of residents is profound, as is the impact of the grandparents, which is what we call our volunteers, have on my students. Lucky kids to have dozens of grandparents. They really are. We're big on the idea of a school family as an extension of home family. Do they learn together? Yes. We often work on similar skills, such as conversation and fine motor skills, so we get to target two populations with some of our teaching. I work closely with the nursing home activities director. I love when our objectives overlap. What's your number one goal as a teacher? I want the kids to understand what's important to take care of yourself, but you also have a responsibility to do that for others. That teaching of selflessness, I think, is missing in our society. Do you ever catch yourself speaking to adults the same way you speak to preschoolers? Absolutely. My husband gets upset with me for telling him to go potty before we leave the house, but my friends think it's really funny. We found a fix. 9 tricks to improve your life. Ant-proof pet food dishes. Pets. Brings a lot of nifty such as flowers and baseball bats, but it also welcomes seasonal pests such as ants that crawl toward available food sources, including your pet's food. Protect your dog or cat's bowl by setting in a pan of water. Not only the water act as a moat to disperse potential ant invaders, but also pets can slurp away whenever they need a drink. And I've got a picture of a bowl sitting on a tray, fairly deep tray, with not much water, just a little bit of water in the bottom. Number 2. One topping for an instantly healthy burger. A study from UCLA found that topping a burger with a half avocado helped alleviate negative effects red meat has on your heart. Loaded with omega-3s, avocado reduces the restricted blood flow in arteries and the inflammation that occur in the hours after eating red meat. Oh, that's interesting. Number 3. De-stink a funky wooden spoon. Do tonight's brownies taste like yesterday's stir-fry? The culprit might be the wooden spoon you're using. Cooks Illustrated testing several cleaning agents, including baking soda, water, detergent, vinegar, beach, and lemon, and found that since baking soda is water-soluble and easily absorbed, it's able to neutralize organic acids soaked up by wooden utensils. Protect them from lingering food residue, wipe down clean wooden utensils with olive oil, and pop them in a 350-degree preheated oven for 2 minutes. Number 4. Fix tomato sauce with carrot. If you've already spent 30 minutes stirring Nona's secret sauce only to realize it's a bit too acidic for Nona's taste, peel a whole carrot and simmer it in the sauce. Carrots balance the acidity of a tomato sauce by adding a subtle sweetness to the mix. Just remember to remove it before serving. Number 5. Last call for stimulus checks. Since the $1,200 spring 2020 stimulus checks were based on 2019 tax returns, if you didn't have an update or any information on record for the IRS, don't file tax returns due to low income. You may have been left out or received a check for less than the full amount. If so, the IRS announced a recovery rebate credit, which you can claim this tax season using Form 1040 or 1040-SR. You'll receive the amount you missed in the form of an increased tax refund or a decrease in the amount of taxes you owe. Number 6. Keep your trash bag fitted to the can. Does the plastic shopping bag lining your kitchen, bathroom, or trash keep falling in no matter what? Attach a pair of plastic adhesive wall hooks, the kind you might stick by the door to hang keys, upside down outside the can. Then loop the bag handles underneath to keep the bag in place. Makes for an easy removal, too. Number 7. Pick the fastest grocery line. Dan Meyer, Chief Academic Officer at math software company Desmos, estimates that the standard checkout line, each item takes 3 seconds to scan, and the rest of the transaction, niceties, paying, etc., takes 41 seconds. So one overloaded person with 100 items will take less than 6 minutes to be rung up, while 4 people with 20 items each will take around 7. In other words, you're better off behind the one customer with the overloading cart than behind a line of less encumbered express shoppers. Number 2, hide from the Google Street View. This is number 8. Google Street View has its perks, but the idea that anyone anywhere can get a good look at your home is a tad big brother. To fix, pull up your address in Street View, click the 3 vertical dots on the toolbar, and choose Report a Problem. Then select the option to blur your home, license plates, or face, and drag the red box over the part of the view you want to obscure. Submit, and anonymity is yours. Number 9. Unstick a bumper sticker. Have you ever put a bumper sticker on your car and later realized you are a mercurial being in a constant state of reinvention and wanted to remove it? Then dampen a sheet of newspaper with warm water, lay it over the sticker for 15 minutes. When the paper has disintegrated, you'll be able to wipe it and the sticker away in just a few swipes. That's kind of neat. Didn't know that. Food on your plate. I am mangoes, a sweet treat at its peak. One summer day in the early 2000s, Pennsylvania dentist Bakshar Savani sat outside the arrivals gate at New York's John F. Kennedy International Airport, waiting for his father to emerge. 3 hours after his dad's flight from India Atlanta, the senior Savani finally materialized, his finger smelling of, well, U.S. Department of Agriculture. USDA officials had barred him from carrying his haul of mangoes into this country, and rather than toss them into the trash as instructed, he ate several pounds of them right there in customs. The younger Savani, whose father and grandfather were mango growers in Guhar, India, wasn't surprised that his dad refuses to let those mangoes go to waste. He was smuggling in the family's Alfonsos, the most prized of 500-plus varieties of me, precisely because they were not allowed in the United States. Alfonsos are so much sweeter, juicier, more layered and floral in flavor than those you can find in supermarkets here. Indeed, the family has spent 2 decades since trying to bring in and other outrageous delicious Indian mangoes into all your homes. Despite India's being the world's biggest and best producer of me, the mangoes you find stateside are almost always grown in your hemisphere. Most familiar is the Tommy Atkins, that Nerf football-sized red one with a splash of green and yellow. It comes from the Mulgoba, one of 6 types of mango tree that the American professor in Prune, India, sent to the States in 1889, and the only one that survived the Florida climate. But give Tommy Atkins to a mango connoisseur and you'll get laughed out of the Fruit of the Month Club. Much more worthy to supermarket purchases is the bright yellow Ataulfo, or champagne mango, grown in South America, especially during its peak season of March through July. I advise you to snap up some weight, for they ripen so that the skin wrinkles slightly and enjoy a truly, deeply, redolent treat. Luckily, the champagne also requires less labor from you. It's left fibrous to cut, with a thinner pit to work around. No matter the variety, to get at my flesh, poke it with your knife to identify the orientation of my oblong seed. Then slice lobes off both sides of its flat sides. Since the flesh, score the flesh into half-inch cubes, then slice the cubes off the skin. I suggest buying extra of me, not selfishly, but to make up for my high seed-to-flesh ratio. Ignore my color when you're looking for sign of ripeness. I usually taste best when I'm soft to the touch, like very ripe avocado. A 3/4 cup serving of me will give you half your daily vitamin C and 50% of your daily folate and copper needs, and I be me your tastier route to fiber. Think of me more than just a fruit salad filler and roughage, however. I sweeten sticky rice in Thai desserts, get tossed in Jamaican mango chutney, and, drizzled with fresh squeezed lime juice and sprinkled with chili powder and salt, make for a popular Mexican street snack. I am tasty even when unripe, dipped in a Salvadoran condiment called aguacate, made from ground pumpkin seeds. Over the centuries in India, I have become a national emblem, drinking mango orgies, eating fringes at the start of my season, and even inspire the country's paisley pattern, whose shapes, if you look twice, resemble mine. Hence the Savani's quixotic mission to spread the magic. In 2006, after the junior Savani had worked for years to convince the United States to let Alfonso in, George W. Bush sampled one and called it a hell of a fruit. The U.S. and Indian government struck a deal permitting the Indian mangoes to enter the states. In return, India allowed Harley-Davidson motorcycles, previously banned on account of their high carbon emissions. Savani imported the first load of Alfonso's in April 2007. Those boxes sold out immediately, and everyone thought it was only a matter of time before they took over the U.S. market. But the cost of shipping, combined with various U.S. Day importation rules, put the price too high, up to $40 for a dozen. Aside from the canned pulp available online, the Alfonso left America. Yet Bascai Savani is his father's son. He now sells another delicious mango, the Kesar, via Fresh Direct, and vows it's only a matter of time before the king of my species sits by its humble cousin in your supermarket. The perfect mango lassie. Using a countertop or immersion blender, combine 1.5 cups of yogurt, preferably whole milk, a pinch of salt, and 1.5 cups of canned Indian mango pulp. You can order the Swad brand of either Kesar or Alfonso variety from Amazon.com or Walmart.com. It's worth the trouble. Blend in milk, 1/4 cup at a time, reaching desired thickness. Blend in 1 teaspoon of sugar at a time to taste. Flavor with 1/8 teaspoon ground cardamom and a few drops of rose water. Serve at room temperature, chilled or on the rocks, optionally garnished with crushed pistachios. The lassie can be made ahead and refrigerated up to 1 day. Whisk before serving. And my computer is doing weird things. My apologies. Male teachers in my old, this is all in a day's work. Male teachers in my old school had to wear suits, but one colleague always managed to subvert the dress code by wearing the ugliest ties. Every day, staff and students alike couldn't wait to see what hideous accessory he had on. When he retired, I finally asked him, "Why the ugly ties?" He responded, "Because that way no one would ever know I only owned one suit." Now that's funny. I gave a presentation to a small town as part of my role with North Carolina's Department of Transportation. At the end, I asked, were there any questions? There was. "Can we move the deer crossing sign on the state-owned road?" asked a councilperson. "Why?" I asked. "That location isn't a safe place for the deer to cross." Susan Rhodes of Hampstead, North Carolina. I can't believe that. The science test question asked, "What is hard water?" The students answer, "Ice." When I worked at an employment agency, I was interviewing a candidate for an entry-level job. I read his application as we talked, name, address, year of graduation, and so on. Then I looked at what he had written next to the box and said, "Position desired." Near a window, it said, "Sonador in the New York Times." My kindergarten student needed a glue stick, so I opened my supply cabinet to see what I had. "Wow, you have a lot of stuff," he said. "You must make a lot of money. Where do you work, anyway?" Tony Gamm in Chillicothe, Ohio. I just spent 15 minutes liking photos of dogs on Instagram. Time well spent. There are 68,000 medical billing codes doctors use to denote injuries and maladies for insurance purposes. These actual codes are among the more specific ones. W59.22XA, struck by a turtle. Y93.D1, stabbed while crocheting. Z63.1, problems in relationships with in-laws. V91.07XD, burned due to water skis on fire. V9733XD, sucked into a jet engine. I hate office lingo and ode. When you say ping me, I want to punch you. It's true, bio break too. To make me cringe, and if I'm being honest, I don't care about your ducks or where they're in. I don't know what net-net means, unless it's being said by an excited tennis announcer. Come to think of it, let's not circle back, or drill down, or take a deep dive, or take it offline, or level the playing field, or create action items. And honestly, I don't care if this won't scale. And I may add that going forward, I'd like to park this project and this job. I quit now. Sorry. I have a hard stop. Your true stories in 100 words. Time in memoriam. After my husband passed away, I had no choice but to find new homes for all of his electronics. A man named Jim wanted a clock my husband had made, even though it was dusty and all the wires hanging out of it. Weeks later, a package came. My husband's clock, gleaming and working like new. Jim's note said he had a strong urge to fix it and return it to me. I believe my husband wanted that clock to be home again. Alan Haveman, Newton, New Jersey. A new member of Arnie's Army. When I was a student at Wake Forest University in North Carolina, I lived in a dormitory named after a famous alum, Arnold Palmer. A big portrait of golf legend hung in the foyer. One day, a friend of mine, an international student from China who didn't know who Palmer was, came by to pay me a visit. When she got to my room, she asked, "Why is there a huge painting of George W. Bush in the lobby?" That's right, they do look kind of alike. I have a funny story, which is not in the magazine, but I'll tell it anyway. I was at a golf match in New Jersey. It was the U.S. Open. And Arnie hit a shot. It was somewhat of an errant shot. And hit the lady who was standing right next to me. And oddly enough, it didn't hurt her, but oddly enough, she was more excited about the fact that Arnie came over and gave her the golf ball than you could imagine. She was bouncing up and down like it. She was a middle-aged lady. She was bouncing up and down like it was the best thing that ever happened to her. It was so funny. Is there a real doctor in the house? I have a Ph.D. in acoustics, and I spent my career working as a research physicist. On my son's 11th birthday, we invited his 6th grade class over to celebrate. I walked into the dining room just as my son was explaining to a classmate whose father was a physician. My dad's a doctor, too, but not the kind that does anybody any good. Poultry in motion. As though things weren't strange enough last spring, a wild turkey started showing up on my block. It's normally one of the busiest intersections in Minneapolis, but this turkey strutted down the sidewalk day after day as if she belonged. As word got out about her, more and more people came out to see her. A young woman told me that he had a name for her, Tina. Tina the turkey. Tina must have been laying eggs in front of the neighbor's house. She would squat and wiggle her rump in the same place in her yard every day. One day she paraded with 5 other turkeys through the parking lot, up the 2.5-foot cement wall, and into the yard. I watched in awe. 6 wild turkeys. One had her feathers ruffled. I think it must have been Tina. This was her territory now, and there were many days when Tina would stand in the parking lot, a dangerous place for a slow-moving bird, and refuse to move, blocking cars from coming or going. Then became a show, with Tina the starring role until the day a new character appeared on stage, an airy-looking man with matted black hair. He looked homeless. He was covered in dirt, his posture stiff. He approached Tina and began to strike curious poses in a beautiful trance-like dance. Tina engaged him with this dance. Together they were art in motion, and because of the stay-at-home order, I got to see them. I will always remember this turkey when I think back on the coronavirus pandemic. She brought a lot of joy to the community at a time when people desperately needed an escape. Sometimes 100 words just aren't enough. How about some news from the world of medicine? Home is where the heart risk is. Life partners share many things, and it often includes similar cardiovascular health, according to the JAMA Network Open Study of 5,364 couples. The correlation seems to occur when both partners share the same risk factors, such as high cholesterol, smoking, physical inactivity, obesity, high blood pressure, or poor eating habits. On the flip side, researchers found that partners can also have a positive effect on each other. Participants were 2.3 times more likely to quit smoking if their other halves did, and 6.4 times more likely to follow the other's lead in improving their diet. Rethinking the risk of breast cancer surgery. Breast cancer can often be stopped through surgery, mastectomies and lumpectomies, but doctors don't always offer it to women over 70, worrying it might do them more harm than good. However, new research suggests that while surgery is life-threatening for some, most older women tolerate better than had been assumed. In fact, only the least fit and most frail patients don't fare better with these procedures. Of course, some women may still be willing to risk a shorter life if they can avoid these invasive treatments. To help with the decision, British researchers have created a tool that doctors and patients can use together to estimate survival with and without surgery. It's available at theagegap.shef.ac.uk. A little aside, my mother had a double mastectomy at 88 and lived for another 8 years. How to cook arsenic out of rice. Arsenic is found in soil and water. and unfortunately rice is good at absorbing this toxic element as it grows. The finished grain doesn't contain enough arsenic for most adults to worry about, and while no rice-related harm has been documented in children, in general their small bodies can be poisoned more easily. For families that eat a lot of the grain and may want to play it safe, British founders found that a method that gets rid of more than half of the arsenic while keeping a lot of the vitamins and minerals. Parboil 1 cup of rice in 4 cups of boiling water for 5 minutes. Drain the water and place it with 2 cups of fresh water, then finish cooking at low to medium heat. In CPR, breaking bones is the lesser of evil. You wouldn't know it from watching TV portrayals of people performing CPR, but nearly a third of recipients end up with broken ribs. Still, if you are working to save a life, don't worry about the fractures. A recent Spanish study found that adults with CPR-related fractures had a much better chance of surviving cardiac arrest without brain damage than those who had no fractures. The American Heart Association recommended a depth of at least 2 inches for chest compression on an adult. And another personal story, we aren't supposed to do a whole lot of this, but I'll say it anyway. I was having supposed outpatient surgery. This is last spring. And I carted on the table. In other words, my heart stopped. And they did CPR on me. And I do believe they broke a rib because it hurt like heck for about a month and a half. But I survived and didn't really have any, well, maybe I had a little brain damage. I'm kind of nuts anyway, but that's beside the point. I survived it. Nighttime blood pressure, why it matters. For most people, their blood pressure dips slightly when the body relaxes at night. For others, it spikes, a condition known as nocturnal hypertension. For a Japanese study, people with daytime hypertension or other cardiovascular risk factors, diabetes or high cholesterol, for example, wore ambulatory blood pressure monitors for at least 24 hours. The devices revealed that 12% of the participants experienced nocturnal hypertension, and these subjects had an even higher risk of developing heart disease than the others, especially heart failure. If you're getting treated for blood pressure but check it only during the day, uncontrolled nighttime irregularities could be overlooked. Ask your doctor whether ambulatory monitoring is available. Choose an exercise app that suits your personality. If sticking with an exercise habit is a challenge for you, there may be an app for that. In a University of Pennsylvania trial, smartphone games help subjects become more active. Participants are randomly assigned to one of three versions of a game that recorded how many steps they took each week. The first version placed them in direct competition with others. In the second version, they worked as a group to gain points. In the third, players earned points of their own, but were asked to designate a friend or family member to be their supporter. This person received an email each week, reporting on the player's performance in order to help cheer her or him on. On average, all three groups racked up more steps than usual. That said, certain versions of the game work better for people with different personality traits. For instance, players who were more outgoing and more motivated to persevere with their goals tended to accumulate more steps in a competitive mode. In contrast, introverts responded well to the game, whether it was competitive, collaborative, or supportive. A third type, made up of those prone to taking risk with their health and safety by not wearing a seatbelt, for example, or a mask, was not helped by the game at all. Though not all of us benefit, exercise gamification can work, and work especially well when you keep your personality in mind as you choose among the many available apps. The pros and cons of PPIs. One of the world's most commonly used drug, proton pump inhibitors, bring relief from acid reflux, peptic ulcers, and indigestion. However, scientists have linked long-term use to an increased risk of kidney disease, gut infection, stomach cancer, and recently diabetes. If you have no choice but to rely on PPIs for 2 years or more, ask your doctor about getting monitored for side effects regularly. Exploring, even close to home, is a mood booster. COVID-19 curbed the joy that can come from travel, but didn't have to end it. A Nature neuroscience study showed that simply exploring near where you live brings novel experiences that can actually lift your mood. Department of Wit. And the picture is a drawing of a woman who apparently is an android robot because there's wires coming out of the back of her neck and she has hinges on her wrist and elbows. And her little girl is behind her winding the crank-up thing like you used to see in these crank-up toys. My mommy is broken. A toddler emails a complaint to customer service. Attention, customer service. I am writing to you seeking assistance with my mommy. I received my mommy in 2019 and was immediately pleased with the model. The first year she worked great. She was attentive. She satisfied my needs and rarely caused me any grief. However, over the last year I've noticed incremental changes in her quality. For example, she used to jump to rescue me from my prison whenever I whimpered, and we retired to her room until morning. Now I receive a stern whimpered, "Stern, go back to sleep," yelled from somewhere in the darkness. I understand that routine use of the big bed is an introductory offer, but I thought it was automatically extended until year three. Did I misunderstand the contract? I've also noted an increasing lag in my mommy responses during daylight hours, whereas before a tearful shriek would invoke an immediate response and impressive checklist of possible solutions, including snacks, cuddles, and various funny faces intended to make me laugh. Now she only sighs and rolls her eyes when I throw myself on the floor. In fact, there seems to be an inverse relationship between her level of concern and the caliber of my dramatic performance. Have you found this to be a problem with continued use? Another cause is my mommy's translation feature. What I found is increasingly glitchy. She will ask me questions such as, "Are you ready to wash your hair?" And I'll always say no. And still, I end up with a face full of shampoo every time. It's very frustrating. It lost days of cereal-encrusted hair and painstakingly applied marker tattoos because of this issue. It seems more of a problem with the understanding of my negative responses, which is curious. I haven't once answered affirmatively about wanting a diaper change, yet they continue to happen. But all of my issues, the most concerning is this. As I discover new and exciting things, I prefer to fully immerse myself in them. And this mommy seems to struggle with the concept of repetition. I know this mommy was rated higher for her adherence to routine, but she has never once faltered at making coffee at dawn or declaring bedtime at precisely 7 p.m. So when does she sink tire of the baby shark after the 10th or 11th viewing? Clearly, I've raised serious issues. As such, I suggest that you take the time to expand your research and development to improve the mommy. I would be happy to list a list of ideas I've been workshopping, including the eradication of some of the mommy's most hurtful phrases. Just a minute. You need to wait, and don't eat that. Just let me know. I anxiously await information you may have on automatic updates that might remedy these issues. Sincerely, Reese. Researchers have long known that humans' ability to detect the smell of rotting fish is located on a gene named TRAR5. They didn't know until the study was conducted in Iceland in October 2020 that about 2% of the population have a mutation on the gene that makes them immune to that similar olfactory experience. For people with the broken gene, rotting fish smells as sweet as flowers or a sugary dessert. And with that, we have just about run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest. Since I didn't do consumer reports, I won't even mention that. Be sure to listen in next time when we will do consumer reports. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcasting is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time, and thank you so very much for listening. Thank you.